Welcome, everybody, to A Minor Detail. My name is Ryan Miner. I am your host. You can find us live every Sunday evening at 9 o'clock p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/A Minor Detail. And you can find us on the web at aminordetail.com. And we are covering the races. And when I say we, just me, your editor-in-chief, Ryan Miner, just the lone survivor of the blogosphere. No, I'm kidding. There are so many excellent journalists who are covering races all over the state of Maryland, and me included. And I want to give a shout out to my friends over at Seventh State Blog. Those guys have provided some detailed analysis that should go not unrecognized, because it's important to races, especially the one that we are going to talk about tonight. And as I go forward to June 26th, that's the big date in mind. That is the primary that I'm sure most candidates have indelibly imprinted inside of their minds, because that is the day of the primary. That's when a lot of this upcoming races will be decided. So I'm really excited tonight to have a really great candidate on the show. His name is Seth Grimes. He is a Montgomery County Progressive Democrat running for the Montgomery County Council at large. Yes, there's about 175 candidates in the race, and no, I kid. But Seth, I want to first welcome you to the show, and second, what is the number at now? How many candidates are in the race?
Hey, Ryan, thanks for having me on this show. It's great to be here. There are, right this minute, I believe, 28 Democrats running for Montgomery County Council at large, four at-large seats, so there are 28 of us running for four seats, one incumbent.
What does that say about the activity level on the local side of politics? Are people engaged? It seems like it.
So I suppose if you were to just take the number and divide, my chances are 7-1. Of course, it doesn't exactly work that way, because some candidates have much better chance than others. But you'll find a similar ratio for people running for county executive, for people running for Montgomery County Council District 1. And so it's not just the at-large race that's attracting a lot of candidates. It's other ones as well. People want to get involved, and that has any number of reasons. And I have mine. Each candidate has his, her, or their own reasons. And we have some great people running.
We do have some great people running, and you are one of them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, as we've done in previous interviews, my style on radio and podcast is to really bring out the human side of the candidate. Oftentimes candidates typically get into a room and they talk about policy, and that's great, because that's what it's all about. You want to become an elected official to solve problems and sometimes create new ones. I hope not, but you want to do fundamental good inside of a community that you and I love. But oftentimes we overlook the humanistic side of candidates, their passions, what they are emboldened by, how they get started in politics. And so I want to start off this show with an anecdote that when I first met you, you and I had set up a time to chat, I believe back in August or September of last year. And you were the first county council candidate that was on my list to meet. And my goal was to meet with every single one of them. Now, I haven't reached that. Yeah, right. So, I had a lot of early mornings, and we had talked, and I said, okay, could you meet me for breakfast down in Rockville? And we met around 7 o'clock in the morning. So we sat down over some coffee and had a conversation. And what most impressed me by you, Seth, was you were the only candidate so far. Well, maybe another one, but you took out a notebook and said, hey, Ryan, do you mind if I take notes? And it hit me, and it was almost out of left field, and it caught me off guard. And I said to myself, wow, I've never had that happen to me before. It was humbling. It was like, my goodness, this is a candidate who is going to have a conversation with me, but not only listen, but is going to commit what our discussion was to paper. And Seth, that was really meaningful to me, and I just haven't seen that happen. So I appreciate that about you, and I'm sure that when you have other meetings, you take that into practice. But that meant a lot to me when you did that. So I want to start off on that very positive note.
Well, thanks, Ryan. I'm glad you thought so. Yeah, I do take notes for my own purposes so that I remember what we talked about. I copy down the to-dos. I ask people who else I should be speaking to, all of that kind of stuff. But it's really important to have a record of the conversation. I have had, many conversations like that one. You and I met at First Watch in Rockville. And I think within a couple of weeks of that meeting, I had also had breakfast with Doug Duncan, the former county executive, with Rich Parsons, who was one of Doug's campaign managers and is currently David Trent's campaign manager. And I think you've had some interactions with Rich, but not all interactions with people running for office are positive. I think you can testify. I have had great conversations. They're a wonderful way of not only building relationships, but of learning from people about issues. And you don't learn unless you ask.
Right. That's true. And, you know, speaking of Rich Parsons, he and I had coffee a few weeks ago, and we sat down and talked and had a nice conversation. And whatever misconception or misjudgments there were have now been fully solved. So we have moved well past that. And we put that, and we now have a pretty good relationship. So, you know, people, you get into politics and sometimes people misjudge one another. And until you sit down and have a conversation, it changes the tone. It changes your entire mindset. And that's why I do this show, is to introduce people who are paying attention to politics to the candidate, to get them to know not just what you stand for, but the type of person that you are, the character, your passions, your concerns, and your life story. So let's start at the beginning, Seth. You got involved in politics how many years ago?
You know, I like to tell people I am a lifelong activist since college. Back in college, some friends started Middletown was the city where I went to school, Middletown Cooperative Recycling, and that was decades ago before you had municipal recycling programs, and I rode on the back of the truck and collected newspapers and beer bottles from the frats. In that era, they had cigarette butts floating in an eighth of an inch of beer. Some friends and I started a cooperative student-run used bookstore to buy back textbooks, hugely expensive, from other students and resell them the next semester, which is a great way of saving people money, and it works so long as the addition hasn't changed. I've been doing this stuff for a long time, and I first got involved in Montgomery County politics. I've lived in the county for 21 years, back when the county was replacing a fire station in my neighborhood, and they were creating what I would call a cookie-cutter design that's suitable for a very large suburban tract, really a sprawl kind of design. And so a bunch of neighbors got together. Actually, Mark Elrich was one of them as a Tacoma Park City Council member at that point, and fought the county plan, which would have taken a couple of adjoining homes. And we got it down to one home lost. And it's really a way of trying to get involved on a hyper-local level with a county government that is used to doing stuff on a very, very large level to really make sure that the local voices are heard, that we're doing right by our individual communities.
So, Seth, you currently live in Tacoma Park, where you had served on the Tacoma Park Town Council. Is that correct? Or the city council?
Yeah, I served two terms, 4 years on the Tacoma Park City Council. I'd actually run for office once and lost in 2005. I ran for mayor of Tacoma Park, and I lost to an entrenched incumbent. Yeah, that was an interesting race. I learned a lot from it, and I will say that I'm on extremely good terms with the person I lost to, and that's just part of politics. It's not personal. We recognize, as you were saying earlier, that each person who's in public affairs is approaching this with goodwill, and you have to just assume that and to try to find common ground where you can.
Yeah, that's a big effort, is finding common ground. And let's talk a little bit about your family and your upbringing and some of your background. You, on your website, if you go to SethGrimes.org, again, that's SethGrimes.org, and you go to the Meet Seth section of the website, it's very sweet. You talk about your wife, and her name is it Franca? Is that correct?
Yeah, Franca Brilliant, yeah.
Franca, okay. And you say that you're 21-year Montgomery County resident, and your spouse, she works for Casa de Maryland. And
correct.
You have two children. One is in college, and one is now it works in theater in Chicago. That must be an interesting experience. Chicago's a great city.
Oh, yeah, I love it there. I don't like the extremes of weather there. It's more extreme than we have here. But, I go out, and if you meet me at a meet and greet, half the time I open up with it. I grew up in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. It's a good joke. It kind of breaks the ice there. So, yeah, and my younger brother, Josh, is a township commissioner in Lower Merion Township near Philadelphia. So in a way, two of the three brothers are in politics, and my older brother, Rob, lives in Potomac. And actually, my wife's brother, my wife grew up near New York City. My wife's brother lives in downtown Chevy Chase with his family. And then my cousin lives up near Damascus. So we have a lot of family in Montgomery County. Interesting little thing for you. My cousin near Damascus, his wife is retiring this year after 40 years as a Montgomery County Public Schools first grade teacher. That has to be a record, 40 years in the same grade in MCPS. And one of their daughters actually is in Montgomery County Public Schools kindergarten teacher. So I have family pretty much spread throughout Montgomery County.
Wow. And so growing up in Montgomery County, PA, I presume you're an Eagles fan.
You could say that.
Okay.
I can't say I follow sports closely, but I was pretty pleased with this last win, like a lot of people were, and not only because I wanted to see New England lose, as some people did.
I did. I really wanted to see New England lose, so I was happy to see a Pennsylvania team win because I grew up in Western Maryland, and we had four football teams. People like our family, we followed the Steelers closely. My grandfather is a lifelong Steelers and fan. But on the baseball side, however, Seth, we were always Red Sox fans. And you know, secondary to that was the Orioles. And we had friends who were Redskins fans, who were Ravens fans. My dad is a big Ravens fan. And of course, we always had the four teams, the Eagles were, they had another contingent up in Western Maryland. And growing up in Western Maryland and then going to school in Pittsburgh, I was just happy to see the Eagles finally win the Super Bowl after all these years. So, yeah, it was good night last Sunday.
Yeah, I would say so. Actually, I was mostly a baseball fan growing up, and I'm a bit older than you are. I remember having a lot of debates about baseball, including with people who were this is predating the existence of the Washington Nationals, with people who were very partisan for the Orioles. I remember in college a debate about some of my friends were having about who was the best pitcher, for instance, in the late 70s. Was it Jim Palmer with the Orioles, or was it Tom Seaver with the Mets? And, of course, the answer was actually Steve Carlton with the Phillies. So
well,
fun to be able to answer a question that way.
We were in Philadelphia a couple of times, beautiful city, and I'm glad that the fans didn't go too crazy. I mean, we football fans have a tendency when they win the Super Bowl. I was there in Pittsburgh for two Super Bowl wins, and I saw a lot of just wild things. And as a fraternity boy back in the day, I got to tell you, I probably can't share a few things on the air, but nonetheless, we had a pretty wild night.
I think we can all use our imagination.
Yeah, that's right. So, Seth, where did you go to college?
I went to Wesleyan University in Connecticut. It's a little joke I like to make that if Wesleyan were a city, it would be Tacoma Park. Same sort of kind of out there in left field, since we're talking sports metaphors, out there in left type of approach to politics and social life and so on. And I went to graduate school at the University of Washington in Seattle. I got a master's in math there. And I came back to the Washington, D.C. area for a job, like a lot of people did. I did that not only once, but twice. I moved here after graduate school. And then my wife and I worked out of the country for a while. I had a job in Paris for 2.5 years. And then when it came time to return back to the U.S., Washington, D.C. is where I got a job. So we moved back here again.
Oh, okay. So, and Tacoma Park has then since been home.
Yeah. I actually worked in downtown Silver Spring for 5 years. While I was living on Capitol Hill, I had a reverse commute on the Red Line, so I've spent more time in Montgomery County than just the time that I've lived here. But, yeah, and I started a small business, consulting business here in Montgomery County in Tacoma Park over 20 years ago, so I've been doing that, and I've been very active in civic affairs pretty much the whole time. So I've just been really fortunate that I have the flexibility, the time to get involved in stuff that's going on in the community. It's a real calling for me. So I've done a lot of work in the nonprofit sector as well as in city government, civic committees, the head of the neighborhood association, the board of our local business association, all that kind of stuff. I have a lot of experience working in community as well as in government.
You said you started a small business, and that's on your website, and that happened in 1997. What kind of consulting have you done and are still doing?
I consult to software companies mostly about strategy around certain species of data analysis. So I actually have clients internationally. And it's been a while since I've actually had a client in the Washington, D.C. area. So I consult to them about product and market strategy, what kind of features should they design into their data analysis products, what markets should they go after, that is, what industries and what types of business functions. So that's the work that I have been doing. Fortunately, it has been rewarding, which, again, puts me in a very favorable situation to be able to spend time on civic affairs. So, and I've actually applied that experience locally. So one of the activities that I've been involved in since 2016 is working as a volunteer mentor for the Maryland Tech Council's Venture Mentoring Service. So I have a couple of organizations in Montgomery County that I mentor, technology startups. And then I've also applied that my experience professionally and working with some variety of initiatives, business type initiatives. So, for instance, there's a church around the corner from where I live, the Tacoma Park Presbyterian Church, and I went to 2 years worth of meetings back in 2012, 2013 to further the conversion of the church kitchen into a community commercial kitchen. So if you want to sell food commercially in Maryland, you need to produce it in a commercial kitchen with inspections and all of that. And then the church went through an initiative to create a commercial kitchen that could be used by people who are especially from immigrant and lower income backgrounds on a part-time basis who don't have the funds to build a full-time kitchen facility. So I've actually applied my professional background in a variety of community ways as well.
Well, it certainly seems like data analysis is a really important function of looking at information brought to you, especially as an elected official, not only in Tacoma Park, but when you're elected to the council, that data analysis is like the hottest thing going on these days. And I learned that in some of my MBA classes they say if you want to be a data analyst, clearly that is the sexiest job available right now to you, MBA students with eager minds and bright futures.
Well, Ryan, first, thank you for that when you're elected to the council rather than if.
There you go.
So I'm not sure you ran any numbers in order to reach a conclusion there, but in any case, it's gracious of you to say that. Say it that way. Yeah, so I'm trying to apply some analysis in my campaign, actually, to try to figure out where the voter turnout's going to be greatest. And, there's a saying in data analysis, there's a statistician, George Box, who said, all models are wrong, some models are useful. well, you know, how can you possibly create a voter turnout model when there are 28 people running for four seats when, say, in 2014 Democratic primary, there were only six people running for those same four seats? So real challenging, lots of variables to try to figure out where people are going to turn out, what kind of effect the Trump administration, for instance, is going to have on getting people to turn out and vote in the 2018 primaries. It's an interesting challenge.
I want to go back to your time spent on the Tacoma Park City Council. So when you first ran, and I understand that their election system in Tacoma Park is a little bit different. How were you does the city council elect the mayor? Is that – am I accurate in that?
No.
So
the municipalities in Maryland are different from the counties. We have a number of different systems in Maryland. Tacoma Park has a system that's typical of a lot of municipalities, including Gaithersburg and Rockville, that we have a strong city manager and a relatively weak council. So the mayor in Tacoma Park, we have six wards and a mayor who are each elected directly. And the mayor is basically a glorified city council member, except that the mayor has the power to set the council's agenda. So that's a differentiator there. Yeah, so I was elected to serve one of the wards in Tacoma Park. People don't really appreciate that a very large proportion of the job of a city council member, and of a county council member for that matter, is very routine to look at budgets that are the same from year to year based on the personnel costs, the major cost for operating the county or for the city, that there's a lot of routine work. And there is, however, plenty of space around the edges for innovation. And I was very fortunate that I got elected with a couple of other people in particular who wanted to do innovative things. So, for instance, one of my colleagues elected at the same time, Tim Mayle, and I got together, and I picked up an interest in the community, a few activists, let's call it, you know, just residents who wanted to see a ban on lawn care pesticide use. So I picked that up, I recruited Tim's help, and we made it into city law, and then it became the county law based on a relationship that I had with George Leventhal, who, you know, became convinced that this is the thing to do. So this is not the kind of like routine, yeah, we got to vote $50,000 to buy a new dump truck for the city. This is really innovative type of legislating. So some of my colleagues and I did some really interesting things, and that kind of sets us apart from the routine just vote on the budget type of stuff. And all this time, however, I really valued hearing directly from residents about what they were interested in pursuing and pursuing their interests rather than putting forward my own. So, you know, I come to this race for office with an idea of things that I really want to get done, but it's based on what I've heard out in the community. Yeah.
What do you, looking back at your time spent on the Tacoma Park City Council, what are your biggest accomplishments that would propel you to be a promising county council official?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You started off by mentioning the Seven State blog, and I did have had a real interesting meeting a couple hours long with Adam Pagnuco, who wrote a series of candidate first impression profiles. And let's see, I actually have it in front of me. Adam wrote that I'm a person who is fact-oriented, careful, versed in policy, and extremely well-informed. It's obvious that I would be ready to serve on the county council from day one. The point there is an understanding of existing policy of the county laws, but what isn't really captured there is an understanding how you make laws, how you legislate, how you get things done. And you can't just parachute in and expect to take over the world because you have to get the votes on the county council. Well, You have to get the votes of at least 4 colleagues out of 9. It's preferable to get something, a higher proportion of votes. And that is by understanding the motivations and the interests of your colleagues and understanding that there is going to be sufficient support in the community among the various interest groups to do what you're trying to accomplish and that you have a mechanism for paying for it. That is really underappreciated. So, for instance, you might get a candidate who says, yeah, we should have free community college for everyone, but that actually comes with a cost of probably $35 million or so a year. So how are you going to pay for that? How are you going to pay for closing the achievement gap, which is on everyone's list? So, yeah, I actually get into a bit of trouble because I tend not to give rah-rah answers when people ask me, do you support this or that, because I realize that just coming up with some position, yeah, that I'm all for something that sounds really great. I'm just reluctant to do that unless I know that we have a way to pay for it and that there's going to be a mechanism for building enough support to get things enacted. That's what I've really taken away from my years in public service, not just as an elected official on the city council, but an understanding of how to get things done, how to build the support necessary, how to find mechanisms to pay for things. Yeah.
Well, I think this is a great segue into talking about some of the issues that you're running on. But I first want to ask you that when you are out and about and you're meeting constituents and knocking on doors and attending candidate forums and various meet and greets all over the county, all the way from the tip top of the northern end of the county or up in, you know, close to the Frederick County border or where you are in Tacoma Park. I live in, I guess it's somewhat considered the middle of the county. I live in North Potomac, so
yeah.
I don't know where, but I guess that would be somewhere up county, of course. So what are you hearing? What are people telling you? Is it different from up county to, you know, to down county where you are? What are some of those top issues that people are concerned about and want to hear you address?
So my niece lives in North Potomac with her family, her husband, and she has a 6-month-old baby. So I've been to North Potomac, too. So, yeah, we're a really large county, ranging all the way to the far reaches, the Agricultural Reserve, Dickerson. People around there are concerned about the Dickerson incinerator. If you go up county to Clarksburg, Damascus, people are concerned, as they are everywhere in the county, about transportation solutions. People bring up highways. They bring up transit solutions. If you go out East County, we have some great development that's getting underway, the Viva Whiteout Project. And it's a very different situation if you go to downtown Bethesda or downtown Silver Spring, where people are very concerned that there is overdevelopment in their areas. There is definitely a common thread, however, and it's not just geographic. So, you know, a few months ago I spoke, I was fortunate to speak at a congregation on a Friday afternoon at a mosque. And largely African immigrants in this particular congregation. And I go out and I speak to people in Chevy Chase, and what I hear is the same sorts of concerns. Great schools. People want great schools because they realize that this is about opportunity for our kids, about a great place for our kids to live and not just ourselves. People are concerned about jobs and business opportunity, the opportunity to start and grow a business here in Montgomery County. People are concerned about transportation, about the time it takes to get from one place to another, whether you're in a car or you're trying to take transit. So we do share those common concerns. And then we also have underlying it all what County Executive Ike Leggett calls the Montgomery Way, the idea that we're going to be a welcoming and inclusive community. And that is extremely important to me, that we welcome immigrants and we make them feel included and protected and safe here as well. It's just a measure of our own humanity, how we treat people who are in difficult situations, whether they are here for they've moved to this area because of economic reasons or because of fears for their safety back home. And we realize that we're not living in isolation in a bubble, that we have gang issues like MS-13, that we really Montgomery County is a microcosm of a much larger world with loads of complexity, and our community reflects all that complexity. So people are concerned everywhere about schools, jobs, economic opportunity, transportation, environmentalism is key, but underlying it all is a sense of compassion and care for one another.
Yeah, that's a vital issue, Seth. I hear this everywhere I go. And the era of Donald Trump where immigrants are on edge, this is a real concern. And when I travel to Western Maryland, people almost snicker. And it's kind of offensive, to be honest with you, when they say, oh, well, you know, what's going to happen? Oh, well, you know, nothing's going to happen. And it's that's just not true. In Montgomery County, we have to be a safe haven, a leader in protecting our immigrant communities. In fact, we're a minority-majority community in our public schools. Our kids are surrounded by so many different cultures and ethnicities, and I am so proud, and that's the God's honest truth, that my children are inside of a public school where they learn about various cultures, and it has just made them so much more well-rounded, that they are intelligent and accepting and caring. That's the kind of community I want to live in for the rest of my time that I spend here in Montgomery County. And immigrants are so vital to Montgomery County's future. They are on edge. Can you speak to that, Seth?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm extremely conscious of it. So, you know, I am a community leader. You have to learn to talk about yourself this way if you're running for office. So on November 9th, 2016, day after the election, you know, we woke up to a different reality. And that morning I got a note from someone who's a therapist in my community saying, you know, people are really upset. What are we going to do about this? So I thought about it a little bit. And I approached a couple of my friends who are community advocates, activists, organizers of longstanding, and said, you know, we should organize a rally. So my friends weren't available that day, Wednesday, the day after the election. So I got things underway and recruited speakers. And we had a rally for community Friday afternoon, 2.5 days later. And the focus was support for immigrants and Muslim neighbors, because those are the people who are most immediately affected, just a climate of fear created by the Trump election. And we got, well, according to Tacoma Voice, we got 800 people out at this rally just on Friday immediately after the election. And I organized that. The speakers, we had Hamza Khan, you probably know, who was the founder of the Montgomery County Muslim Democratic Club. My friend Ahmed Elmi, who is the Somali American Community Association, a former Tacoma Park City Council at that time, Rizzi Qureshi of Pakistani origin, as well as Janelle Wilkins, who was not yet a District 20 delegate. She was appointed just about a year ago, little over a year ago. Family's from, I think she was born in Jamaica herself. So it was really important to have a program that put forward people who were from these most affected communities to speak about their communities, well, their fears and aspirations and so on, and for people like me to show up in support of them. And that's what we did. And that's what Montgomery County does. We stand up and we back our neighbors who need help. When it's not just a matter of immigrants, it's a matter of people who are homeless, people who are food insecure, people who are housing insecure. When we have situations like the tragic fire at the Flower Branch Apartments a year and a half ago, people came forward and tried to help the victims. But on the other hand, it's the job of people who are the elected leaders to step forward and make sure this kind of stuff doesn't happen again. So, for instance, Tom Hucker, the county council member, was really good about supporting the victims, but also has been really good about trying to ensure that these kind of situations don't happen again. And that's a differentiator when you get elected to the county council or in a leadership position in some other way, then you have the power to make sure that things go right. You have the power expressed through the budget, but also through let's call it the moral leadership of standing up and calling attention to things that need that kind of attention. And that's the kind of leader that I intend to be, that I have been in the past. And, you know, I'm hoping that people will recognize that. It's my job as a candidate to make sure that they recognize that I have that in my past and that you can count on me to stand up in that way in the future.
Absolutely. I want to talk about an issue that has been on the minds of the media and the members of the county council, and this intrigued me a little bit. On your website, you wrote that you want to end Montgomery County's monopoly on liquor sales, and you wrote that we all recognize the inconvenience and cost to businesses and consumers that result from the monopoly, and you wrote language when you were on the Tacoma Park City Council calling for an end to this monopoly. That is, some candidates are mixed on this, and I am, I believe that we shouldn't monopolize liquor. I don't know why that's happened, and while I understand that there are several jobs at stake, I do believe in competition, and I just don't think it's the county's job to oversee this. So could you talk a little bit about that, Seth?
Yeah. So I've spent more hours than I care to admit in Annapolis about liquor issues, testifying in the state legislature because of the nature of Maryland's liquor control system. And yeah, back in 2015, actually I inserted language at the request of Hans Riemer, who is now I'm running, well, I suppose I won't say against him, but in the same race as Hans. At Hans's request, I inserted language in a resolution that I got my city council colleagues to pass relating to liquor control. So there's a bit of nuance here that might not be obvious. I have called for an end, dating back 3 years now, to the county's monopoly on liquor sales. I have not called for the privatization of the Department of Liquor Control. I haven't had any position on that, actually, because I recognize that those are jobs. They're union jobs. I support the unions in Montgomery County, and I recognize that the DLC produces, the figure's 30-some million dollars in net revenue for the county every year, and that's important. So I believe in competition, but I don't believe necessarily, I don't believe in just dissolving the DLC or spinning it off into a private entity or anything like that. So there's nuance to that position, and it's nuance that I believe we can make this work. But we need to have a lot of discussions that involve the business community in Montgomery County, individuals, the county government, and the unions in order to figure out a formula moving forward that works. But yes, end the liquor monopoly.
Well, that's an issue that has been debated and debated and debated, and it has become the keystone in a few of our county executive candidates, Bill Frick, namely. David Blair has been talking a lot about this, and I'm sure this is an issue that will continue to take, become the forefront, one of those driving issues that everybody wants to know where the county council will fall down on in the next couple of years.
Yeah, but there's so much politics involved here that I think a lot of people aren't aware of. So for instance, Bill Frick did introduce legislation in Annapolis regarding, this is last session, not this year, regarding the county liquor monopoly. And yeah, he's currently running for county executive. And in some ways, I would say he's running against the current county council because three of the people he's running against are county council members currently. So there's a lot of politics involved here. It makes for interesting races. There are a variety of positions that I would call defensible, but in the end, you have to make judgments, as you were saying earlier, Ryan, based on the data that's out there, based on studies that you commission, based on moral considerations. When I looked at the $15 minimum wage, which passed several months ago in a reformulation after the county executive vetoed the first bill for $15 minimum wage, had passed 5-4, so there weren't enough votes to overcome a veto, had to reformulate it. Well, there were studies that were all over the map about whether a $15 minimum wage was going to be damaging to the economy or actually maybe have no consequences, but it was clear it was going to have consequences for the workers who are low paid. And it became sort of a moral issue. You try to make decisions based on the data out there, but then you end up, if the data is not producing a single clear result, that is based on moral consideration. Now, is there any moral consideration with, some people are think privatization, small government, maybe called libertarian or something like that, market forces and all that.
Sure.
I'm not that way. I want to do what makes sense for the county residents and for a great business climate in the county when it comes to liquor. So there's a lot of nuance here. It's not good for a candidate to get too bogged down in the weeds of this kind of stuff. What it comes down to is that you need to study to hear a lot of different voices, not just wait for people to come before you in hearings, but get out in the community and solicit people's views and try to come up with very well-reasoned positions. Yeah.
And I think people are looking for well-reasoned positions. I want to move on to education, Seth. That's a big topic in Montgomery County. And we have arguably some of the best schools in the country, but I still think there is room for improvement. I am concerned that our schools are overcrowded, that we are looking to spend more and more money. And I know that we're meeting the maintenance of effort, but we continue to ask for more money. Now, look, we have really some of the best schools, and I'm proud of that. And we have those schools for a reason, but there is still that achievement gap that is just not been closed. Well, we keep talking about it and it's just not happening. What needs to happen to close the achievement gap in Montgomery County?
We do have a lot of school crowding issues. The county adds approximately a high school's worth of students to the system every year, about 2,500. We have a single county school system with, I think the figure is 180,000 students for a very large area, but the schools are not equal. Some are a lot richer than others. And so you end up with a school system that carries a burden for feeding kids, for social services, and not just for education. Then we have schools that have large proportion of kids who are from households that where English is not spoken. So a lot of challenges there. The county council, you know, it's tempting to try to reach in there and to run the schools as a council member, and that actually kind of causes some a bit of disquiet, let's call it. It was just a couple of years ago that the county council basically overrode the school board and suspended some teacher raises, and that did not make the teachers union happy, in order to hire additional paraeducators, which is a good thing, except it came at the teacher raise expense. That's not a way to run things. You need to have a collaborative relationship with the school board, between the school board and the county council, with the unions once again. Now, achievement gap, that's a pretty difficult problem. One of the focal areas for my campaign, there are really two or three things that I'm focusing on. One of them is early childhood education. Mm-hmm. There's some good work being done in the county council, especially by council member Craig Rice, who is the chair of the education committee, and council member Tom Hucker for universal pre-K. I sat down a couple of months ago with council member Nancy Navarro, who herself was a child care operator before being elected to the school board and then the county council, to talk about childcare situations. Childcare is expensive. It is not always easy to find placements for your kids, especially at the earliest ages, that are affordable, convenient, reliable, and that have a good educational quality for the kids. Improving early childhood education, I think, is a real key to preventing the achievement gap from opening in the first place. And so we do have a system that offers subsidies and vouchers and so on for early childhood education, for child care of various types, whether it's at institutions or Head Start or at home care situations. We have a lot of very informal situations that are, let's call it, off the books. I want to improve that situation is really a key initiative for me to do that. And, you know, I'm not a climate scientist. I'm not a transportation planner. I'm not a childhood educator myself. As I said, I'm someone who understands the importance of soliciting people's views, including experts, finding data, creating studies, finding ways to get things done that are really important for the community. In this case, Montgomery Moving Forward has an action plan for early childhood education and child care. And it's a workforce issue as well, because let's be real, we're allowing especially younger women to get back into paid work if they choose to do that. We're also creating jobs for people from the communities that are going to be served. There are any number of reasons to pursue this, and so I'm looking at work that's being done in the District of Columbia right now for improved early childhood education, work that's being done through the Montgomery Moving Forward Coalition, an 18-month process, and trying to move that forward. So best way to deal with the achievement gap, keep it from opening in the first place. But the fact is it is there. So other meetings I've had recently include the George B. Thomas Learning Academy, which runs Saturday school to try to help minority kids especially keep up with the academic demands, create a lot of rigor. It's important to have a whole spectrum of these kind of programs to adequately fund schools, to have supplemental educational coverage, to make sure that kids in schools get the proper nutrition, because if you're hungry, you're not going to learn, to try to prevent the achievement gap from opening in the first place via enhanced early childhood education. It's a whole spectrum of things that I will pursue there, but that early childhood education is really a key one on my agenda.
Yeah, I saw that, and it's on your website and your issues page that you are supportive of the the universal pre-K.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Let's move on. Let's keep moving. Another issue is transportation, our infrastructure.
Yeah.
Clearly, we have an infrastructure problem, and I know this will all tie in, but as much as that I would love to see Amazon come to Montgomery County, I think the build it, if you build it, they will come model of addressing transportation that, if we open our doors to Amazon, then I understand that if they come here, great, but we have a problem now where people are sitting in traffic during rush hour.
Yep.
Between 6 a.m. until 9 a.m., and I know this because I travel every day for work into Northern Virginia across the American Legion Bridge. And some days is better than others, but coming home is, oh my, it's a complete mess. And oftentimes I go up Clara Barton Parkway, and then it takes years off my life. We clearly have a problem.
Yep.
And there is solutions floating around between the state, some between the federal government, and at the county council level. So maybe this is a very basic question, but what can we do in Montgomery County to mitigate this traffic problem that we have?
Growth is a good thing. It's evidence that people want to live here. They want to create businesses here. But we need to do more of that, and we need to do more of that for the variety of areas around the county. So I think that there's a lot of growth potential in East County in particular, the Route 29 and New Hampshire Avenue corridors, which will be served by bus rapid transit. That'll take some of the load off the 270 corridor, the American Legion Bridge, as you mentioned. At the same time, we need to invest in transportation infrastructure, regardless of Amazon. I'd love to see Amazon come here. I'm not a fan of corporate welfare by any means.
No.
The huge, huge tax breaks that are promised to Amazon. At the same time, $2 billion of Governor Hogan's proposal from state aid is actually infrastructure and transportation, and we should be spending that money regardless in order to benefit not only the Amazons of this world, but the small businesses and the individual employees who are here already. If we can solve the transportation issues, then we're going to make this county much more attractive for employers, for business growth, and it's going to be a much nicer place to live if we can solve that. So, yeah, I do generally back transit solutions. And as I mentioned earlier, as we were discussing earlier, I have a background as a technologist, and if we invest in smart roadways technology, of which we have very little here in this area, then we can add to the carrying capacity, the load that the existing roadway network can handle by moving the vehicles that are out there now a lot more efficiently. Autonomous cars will contribute there. So in certain ways, the problem will help solve itself through technology over the next few years. And I would say that is a place that we should be putting much more investment that really is not on very many people's radar screens right now.
We talked about, the county council, including County Councilman Roger Berliner, he flat out rejected the idea when he was president of a second bridge going across the Potomac. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I actually organized opposition to that bridge. The idea was that you're going to connect Route 28 in Virginia via a new bridge that is northwest of the American Legion Bridge, and it would have a highway corridor that would pretty much cross the agricultural reserve. A very large portion of Montgomery County is the agricultural reserve, and connect to the intercounty connector. Yeah, there are some very strong proponents of that, including one person we discussed earlier, Rich Parsons, who was a moving force behind the Intercounty Connector a number of years ago. But I see this project as infeasible because it would cut across sensitive wetlands. I see it as undesirable because of the expense involved that the investment should go into transit infrastructure rather than new roadways. And so just the combination of the environmental impact and the choice of where it's best to spend money says this isn't the right project. So I actually got the Tacoma Park City Council to vote a resolution against this project. In the Transportation Planning Board, there's all kinds of levels of government in this area. One of them is the Council of Governments Transportation Planning Board. I served on it myself for 3.5 years. And again, this is reflective of an understanding of how things happen in regional government and in county government, and how to actually make sure that things don't happen by focusing not on rabble rousing, but on the areas where the votes actually are taken, like the Transportation Planning Board. By the same token, I'm going to segue here. When I was on the Transportation Planning Board, I helped the city of Tacoma Park get $2.3 million in federal multimodal transportation funding for a couple of city projects, something called the Flower Avenue Green Street, which is, well, green here means advanced stormwater treatments, good for the Chesapeake Bay, minimizing runoff and so on, creating new sidewalks and much more walkable and bikeable street. Another was our Ethan Allen Gateway project, Route 410. So, I know how to use the different mechanisms for getting funding for blocking projects where necessary. And that bridge and highway corridor across the agricultural reserve, in my book, that was a project that needed to be blocked.
Oh, okay. And so let's talk about another major portion of your priorities, and that is affordable housing. On your website, Seth, you say that Montgomery County faces demand for 4,000 additional housing units each year for the next 10, and that is our greatest need. We live in a county where people like me, I'm in my 30s, if we didn't have two incomes and other sources of income, Seth, there is no way we could afford our house. It's true.
I was in the same situation when I moved to Montgomery County 21 years ago, that it took a two-income family in order to afford the house that I live in. And I recognize that there are many people here who are not as fortunate as I am, not as fortunate as you and Kimberly are. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. And so let's talk about what your priorities are. How can we ensure that people are able to move to our county but able to afford their mortgage payments and able to get in some of the best schools and to be able to build a family here? Because I think that a lot of people want to become homeowners. That is a crux of our American dream that we have grown up believing. And then that's true. My grandparents are a key example. My grandfather back in the 50s or late 40s got out of the army, came back from the war, married my grandmother. They bought their house in 1955 and have been there ever since. No kidding. Mm-hmm. And so that is kind of how I might be old fashioned, Seth, but we live in a very nice three-story townhome, but soon enough our family could be expanding by another. And we would love to move out into the county. We'll probably stay in this area, but Seth, looking at housing prices, and I do this all the time. I go on some of the real estate market websites and look at the value. I mean, I'm just like, what are we going to do? I have to be a millionaire to afford some of these places, and I'm just like, what are we going to do? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I know where you are. Same sort of family situation. I like to joke that my father got an all-expense-paid trip to France and Germany. That was in 1944, not a great time to be going to visit France and Germany. And he came back and, needed to build a life, and the government was here for him via the GI Bill and so on to help him finish college and all of that. And we do have programs now that try to make housing more affordable, mortgage starter programs and so on. But really a key is to create more housing. That'll take some of the pressure off the market. And housing in a variety of areas around the county, transit-oriented, so that if you don't want to own a car, as many people younger than even you don't want to own a car, but there's a lot of variety out there of housing options. One key is to preserve affordable housing. And I look at some of the areas, and there are, for instance, houses. There used to be one across the street from where I live, that are subdivided into apartments, and you get a gentrification effect where people buy these and they combine the apartments in the house and make a single family home out of what used to be maybe four apartments. We lose affordable housing there. We have a lot of concern about what the impact of the Purple Line is going to be. It's going to spur development, and that's a good thing, but we don't want to see displacement. At the same time, we have opportunities to convert some existing office building that's disused, old school buildings, into affordable housing. We have a great example of that in downtown Silver Spring, where the old library site is now proposed. I believe it's a six-story building that will include senior housing and then a child care center that'll accommodate, I think the figure is 110 or 120 kids. So we need to look for infill opportunities where we can, create new housing where we can. One position that I expect to promote is some zoning changes. For instance, along some of the corridors in the county, an example might be University Boulevard or Georgia Avenue, certain portions of other major boulevards to upzone to allow for greater density, maybe instead of single-family homes along those major arterials, four, five-story buildings that will be suitable for those kind of locations that will create additional housing. It's a multidimensional challenge. It's a very diverse county, and we need to be supportive of builders, of the organizations that are going to put up new housing, put up new office buildings for that matter as well. So I've tried to maintain very good relationships with some of those organizations. Just as I reached out to you about meeting, I reached out to the builders, the Maryland Building Industry Association, and had a meeting with them, with developers, including EYA, which does a lot of residential in the county, Washington Property Company, and so on. Because as a candidate, I'm not taking developer contributions.
Right.
But I am very aware that we need to work with those organizations, with the developers, in order to build the housing that we need.
And speaking of money, just shifting directions, finance, I wanted to mention to listeners that you are participating in Montgomery
Yep.
County's new public financing. So that's a big topic, and I think that it's been a beneficial system because it has encouraged new people to come out of the woodwork and run for office. Yes, I know that you have a extremely diverse candidate field that stretches from, A to Z, 28, 29 candidates. So, but I'm happy to know that candidates are using this system effectively, and they're tapping into their networks and raising money this way. And I believe people can max out to you by donating up to $150.
Correct. Yeah. So here's the plug. Go to sethgrimes.org. I can accept up to $150 from an individual. I have qualified for public finance matching funds. My treasurer quite happily is sitting on a nice chunk of funds that we got from the county. I actually testified in Annapolis a couple of weeks ago about expanding the public finance system to include school board and other races. I think that's a great thing. And I will say it's made me, and I'm sure it's made other candidates, into better candidates, because it forces us to go out and talk to a lot of people. You got to ask for money. People are not just going to come and write you checks or go online and donate. You have to ask for the money. And you can't just ask. You have to ask people about their concerns and listen to what they say, and to create a sense that you're going to be working for the people you're asking to donate to you. So public finance has made us better, into better candidates. I think it's a great system. And I'd love for listeners to check me out online at sethgrimes.org. send me a note at seth@sethgrimes.org. And I just love engaging with people. That's the great thing about running for office. It's very time-consuming, very demanding, but it's very rewarding also because I've had some great interactions, great conversations. I've learned a lot. And, you know, this is what I want to be doing, public service. It's really a passion for me, and it's a great opportunity. Public finance, yeah, it's a differentiator for candidates. I really believe in it, and I'm really glad that it has brought out some candidates, created some diversity in the field. Once again, I'm running at large, so people do get to vote for four candidates. You can vote for me and for three other people, and I think it's a really great place for me right now, and I think we're going to have you know, great outcome come June in the primary elections and then November in the general.
Well, we certainly talked about several bits of policy this evening, and we did not get to cover your entire plan. There's a lot of issues out there.
Oh, yeah.
And when you come back, and I hope you do, we'll talk more, a little bit more in depth, and we'll get wonky on some education initiatives that I'm interested in talking to, and some more of a transportation priorities. I want to talk to you about the M83 project, a little bit about the Fix I-270 group that is meeting to discuss how to mitigate the traffic flow in the governor's plan versus some of the county executives' plans. And I'm doing my best to get everybody on the show, and especially the county executive candidates. And I'm interviewing next week David Blair, who is running for county executive. And I don't know if you've come out on the record and talked about anybody that you're interested in supporting or whatnot, but there's what, six of them in the race? I believe that's correct, six.
You know, I know the three county council members, Roger Berliner, Mark Elrich, and Leventhal, George Leventhal. I know them very well. I know Rose Krasnow somewhat well. Don't really know David Blair. I've met him. And then Bill Frick I've met also, but don't know him real well. But I think there's a great crop of candidates there.
Everyone is running hard and working to get out the message, and that's what it's all about. People are activated, Seth. And what I appreciate, it's not only that they're activated, but how do I say this politely? People in politics, they're pissed off for a reason, and that is because they look at what's happening at our national level, and like you, I was disappointed at the election outcome. And it transcends politics, my politics, and I don't get into that, but I just want to say that I watch what is happening on the federal level with the executive branch, and I think every day to myself, this can't be normal. This just cannot be normal.
Yeah, but Ryan, I'll tell you what pisses me off. What pisses me off is that the estimate is that there are 78,000 people in Montgomery County who are food insecure. They don't get enough to eat, or they don't get great nutrition. We have 3,000 kids who get backpacks with food every weekend to take home. It pisses me off that there is an estimated 1,200 youth homeless in Montgomery County. They need a place to live. I've been on the board at Shepherd's Table in Silver Spring. I'm in my sixth year on the board, 2 years as vice chair. I work there every Friday morning at breakfast service. This is what pisses me off. Yeah, Trump, I'm not sure what I can do about that other than fighting in various ways than I do. But we have very immediate, close-to-home problems that I am very eager to continue trying to solve as a county council member.
Well, I think that your heart is really in the place that a public servant spirit should be. And that brings me great confidence, because what doesn't happen at the federal level, it can happen in Montgomery County. And I've seen a lot of creative and progressive ideas pushed forward that it you know, not always makes everyone happy, but we live in a great community and it can only get better. We can only do better. And that is why I think everybody who is running has something to contribute to the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, there's so many qualified candidates who are running for various reasons, and they put their heart out there. They put their policies out there. Some have left jobs. Some have, you know, taken a major pay cut to do this because they believe, like you, in public service, in the betterment of the community. And if we want Montgomery County to continue to be the best place in Maryland to live. And I really mean that. I moved from Western Maryland, and I love where we live. I'm happy with our schools. I'm happy with the local, I guess, the vibe of our community. We have great parenting networks. Our PTA system is strong.
Yep.
And we have a community education network that we operate in. And our kids are actively involved in sports and extracurricular activities. Everything that I could possibly need is right here in Montgomery County. Now, granted, I love to get out onto Maryland's Eastern Shore, but I love to go down to the bay and get out on the water. But, you know, just to wrap up, Seth, I love the ag reserve that we have, and that is one of the most cherished resources that we have in Montgomery County, that ag resource. And it's our job to protect it. We have to protect the reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you are a strong supporter of that. You really are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, completely. You know, we haven't actually talked much about environmentalism either. There are loads of things that we can and should be working to accomplish here in Montgomery County. But, yeah, that's stuff for a next conversation. So, you know, I would just recap that running for office is a blast. As I said, the opportunity to go out and talk to people, to try to find creative solutions for problems or to just better understand the problems and bring people together. We have a lot of shared interests, as we were discussing, in environmentalism in schools, in transportation solutions, affordable housing, trying to support one another, and not just immigrants, but people who are economically less well off. It is a great county. We look out for one another, and we do, however, need a real vision and leadership in Rockville to move things along, to really build consensus, build community. And, you know, that's where I'm coming from. So, you know, it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you. It's also nice that there seems to be some resurgence in journalism locally in Montgomery County after the loss of the Gazette and so on. And what you're doing is part of that, really shedding light on issues and in the players, people who are trying to get stuff done. So, you know, I thank you for the opportunity.
I appreciate that. And I try to stick it right down, stick it right down the middle. I'm an honest-to-God policy person. I love talking about issues, and we can all get into the politics of the politics, or what's called in Montgomery County, the fabulous 500, where everybody sees everyone all the time, but really the message needs to resonate with people who are not so much invested in, going to all the forums. And that's why I do what I do, is just to help people make up their minds with solid and credible information. So, Seth, I really appreciate you spending your Sunday evening with me on the show, and I know that we'll have another opportunity to talk in the future. So thanks for coming on, and go ahead, before we end the show, tell people where they can find more information about you on the web.
Right. Once again, I'm online at sethgrimes.org. That's SETHGRIMES.org. And do send me a note at seth@sethgrimes.org. I'm going to give you my cell phone number. It's 301-873-8225, 301-873-8225. Anyone who's listening, feel free to text me or phone me up, and let's have a conversation for about the third, if not the fourth time. I love engaging with people, hearing about the things that are concerning them, try to figure out how we can move forward together. So sethgrimes.org, and Ryan, thanks for the opportunity once again. And I look forward to future conversations.
All right, Seth. Well, once again, thanks for being part of the show. Best of luck to you as you move forward in your campaign, and come back again soon.
Great. All right. Thanks,
Ryan. All right. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. That was Montgomery County Council candidate Seth Grimes, who is a nice guy and very well-informed. Seth is very well-informed. He knows the issues back, forward, front, sideways. And there's a common sense with him that even if you may disagree with him on issues, he's going to listen. He's going to digest the information. And I can speak from experience. Seth does his homework, and he's very communicative. He will get back in touch with you right away. And how many candidates provide their cell phones? And that's important. And when he, if he elected to represent us on the council level, we want to know that we can reach our leaders, that they're accessible. I mean, I want to be able to reach out and pick up the phone or text them at any time. And I have that relationship with several of our members of the county council. So with that, I want to say thank you for listening. Next week at this time, I will be sitting down with county executive candidate David Blair. And so we will go ahead and wrap up. Have a great week, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. Take the love of your life out to a great dinner. Montgomery County has many fabulous restaurants, and I know that I'm going to be taking my bride-to-be out to I'm not going to tell you where I'm going to take you, because if I told you my secret, it's an Italian restaurant, but I'm going to take her out on Valentine's Day and have a nice dinner. So with that, thank you so much for listening, and have a great week.